Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello, my name is Nigel Jones and I'm Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan, and welcome to today's podcast where we're going to be exploring the latest changes to employment law in the company of Sarah Buxton. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, thank you.
I wonder if, for those people that don't know, you could just explain a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yes, of course. So I'm Sarah Buxton and I'm an employment solicitor and a director of FTA Law. We're based in Leeds, but we act for dental practice owners, managers and dentists in all aspects of buying, running and selling dental practices. My specialism, as I say, is employment and HR matters, so anything to help with the day-to-day running of a dental practice.
Excellent. Well, I mean, there's a number of questions that I'd like to put to you today, and I think I have to start with one of the hottest topics going, which is GDPR. Now, most of the debate about GDPR seems to be around how practices should interact with their patients, but a really important component of GDPR is what impact it has in terms of the relationship between businesses and their employees, their staff. So what are the changes arising from GDPR and what the practice owners need to do?
It is a hot topic at the moment, something that's frustrating quite a lot of my clients, actually, just because there's not a lot of guidance out there about what exactly should be done. I think there isn't a lot of guidance out there because the Information Commissioner's Office themselves are not exactly sure about the impact it's going to have and how they're going to police it. But I do think it's important that all practice owners should be reviewing their data protection policy. And that's because there are several changes that will need to be made to that policy. I must say that in respect of employees, the law isn't changing dramatically. There's not a great change from the Data Protection Act, but there are just a few things that we need to look at. So, for example, if an employee makes a subject access request where they say to the employee, for example, I want my HR file, previously, the employer could charge a £10 fee for the photocopying and administration involved in that, and they had 40 days to provide all the documents. However, you're not allowed to charge anymore for that fee. Often the written policy will refer to a fee being charged, and therefore that needs to be updated. But you can see in the grand scheme of things, it's actually quite a small change that needs to be made. I think the most significant change is that previously it was okay to have quite a wide clause in the employment contract where the employee gave their permission for the employer to process their data. So what I mean by that is if, for example, you put photographs of the team on the website, a photograph of an individual is their personal data, and the only way you can go about doing that is if you have their permission to do it via the employment contract. But the contract was quite wide and it covered a multitude of scenarios. But now what we need to do is be really specific about how you're going to process the data of the employees. So, for example, if you are using their photographs on the website, you need to actually spell this out to them. That's one way you'll be processing their data. Another way, for example, is if you do equality and diversity forms, you may be transferring their data to an external payroll provider. So you do need to provide all that information to your staff, and we would do that via what's called a privacy notice. You send that out to all of the staff, get them to sign it, keep it on the HR file, and that should be enough to mean that you've complied with the GDPR in respect of getting the consent from the employees. I think the biggest change that practice managers and owners need to be aware of, and I think where they're most at risk, is in respect of applicants who are applying for jobs. Because I'm aware that lots of practices get CVs just sent to them on an ad hoc basis, and they may keep that data for quite a long period of time. It's really important that you get the applicant's consent to keep that data on file. So if you need to keep it for 6 months to a year, in case another job role comes up, then you need to get the consent of the applicant there to ensure that you can keep their CV for future reference.
So how would that work practically? So someone's said, written and sent a CV, you're replying saying we actually don't have a vacancy, but we'd like to keep your CV on the books.
Yes.
Could you please confirm it? Is it as simple as that?
Absolutely, yes. Or if you're if you do have vacancies that you advertise, you may want to put something at the bottom of your advertisement, just saying any data received will be kept for 6 months from the date it's received, or something along those lines.
So the assumption there is that if they've read the advert, seen that bit...
Yes.
Then by actually sending the information, they've given consent.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. I think at the moment, we don't know how it's going to unfold, and we don't know what the consequences are of not complying with these changes. But what I am aware of is that it is going to be something where the ICO gives employers the opportunity to get all their ducks in a row, and it's going to be over the next 6 to 12 months. So don't worry if you're not set up for GDPR, and you've got plenty of time to get everything sorted. They just want to see that you understand that there is a change and that you will be making those changes eventually.
Okay, that's really quite an important point, isn't it? Because I think there's a lot of fear at the moment because of the uncertainty, I think.
Yes.
But actually, if they've got a bit more time, then I guess there will be a few test cases as well in that time period that will help clarify things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we'll get more advice from the ICO, and there will be cases that go through the tribunals that will help us determine then what we have to do. What I would say to lots of practices out there, because they do carry a lot of patient data, at the moment, insurance to cover a GDPR claim is relatively cheap because we've not dealt with it before. So I do really think it's worthwhile practices looking into whether they can insure for breaches, because I think the worst case scenario here would be when an associate takes a patient list. That would be a big breach of the regulations, but it always would have been. It's not something new. It's just that now people are more aware of it. So I think it's important that if that happened, if you've got insurance in place, then any fines would hopefully be covered in that situation.
Well, I was going to say, because I suppose one of the changes is the level of penalty that can be levied on someone that has.
Yeah, absolutely. They're linking it to turnover. So it is changing. And also they are expecting you to self-report. So if something like that happened, the ICO expects you to be aware that that's a breach of the regulations and to report it and show that you're doing everything to stop it happening again.
Yes, I mean, one of the things that I've sort of picked up as I've been looking at this myself is that you're right, although actually it's an evolution from the Data Protection Act that was already in place rather than a complete revolution.
Yeah.
Actually, I think a lot of people didn't necessarily take the Data Protection Act as seriously as they should do, so they've got a bit of catching up to do, and the penalties and the potential impacts now are focusing the mind somewhat.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's like most employment legislation that comes out, the law changes very quickly, and this is why it's really important that practice owners and managers do take the opportunity to review their policies and procedures and their contracts on an annual basis to make sure that they are up to date. There's lots of contracts that I come across that don't even mention the Data Protection Act, and that's been in force for well over 10 years. So it is important really that we do get the contracts up to date and ensure that we do send out privacy policies to get specific consent from the employees. It's really important to do that.
Absolutely. Okay, well, moving on to another topic that I suppose really came to the attention towards the end of last year, 2017, but the hashtag MeToo campaign.
Yes.
What effect has that had on the workplace, do you think?
I think it's had a huge effect on the workplace because I think people are more aware of their rights. So for sex discrimination claims and sexual harassment claims, it's important to note that the intentions of the person that's committing that act are irrelevant. It's actually how the individual feels who's being harassed. So you may say something to a woman that you perceive to be as banter, but actually it may really hurt her feelings, and that's enough for her to claim that that was sex discrimination or harassment. It doesn't matter about the intentions of the person who may be just having a joke. And this has meant that because of the Me Too campaign, more people are aware that sexual harassment in the workplace is an issue where they can bring claims. So there's been an increase in the amount of claims that have been made in the tribunal. And for sexual discrimination claims, the amount of compensation that's awarded is unlimited, so it's whatever the judge believes is fair and equitable on the day. So it can be an extortionate amount that's paid out. And I think because of this, practice owners need to get themselves into a position where they've protected themselves, because they are responsible for the acts of their members of staff. So even if it had nothing to do with the practice owner, if one colleague made a comment to another colleague, the practice owner would still be responsible, and they would be the ones who would be taken to tribunal. So it's really important that if this ever happened, the practice owner at tribunal can show that they've done everything in their power to stop harassment in the workplace. And you do that by, for example, having an equality and diversity policy, and having equality and diversity training for the entire team. The first thing the judge would ask for in any sex discrimination claim would be the equality and diversity policy, and if you didn't have one, then it wouldn't go down very well. So I do think it's had the Me Too campaign has had a massive effect on how people react with other people in the workplace. I think they have become more aware that what we once perceived to be as banter, maybe we can't go that far anymore.
And I think one of the areas where it might get a little bit tricky is because practice teams are quite often small and they're quite often fairly stable. So people have got to know each other maybe very well over a long period of time. And then a new member of staff comes in who maybe doesn't feel as at ease as the rest of the team do, but the rest of the team have got to be sensitive to that.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really hard in smaller businesses because if you're a business where you have 200 employees, the chances of you speaking to all your colleagues or having banter or having, you know, team lunches or going out, the chances of that are limited. Where in a dental practice, it is very much like a family. I think it's up to the practice owner, therefore, to just remind the team on a regular basis that it is still a place of work.
Yeah.
And it makes me sad in a way that we've got to this stage, but unfortunately it is a real risk for employers, so we do need to be aware of it and take it quite seriously.
Yes, I think that's right. The sad thing is that some of the fun may go out of it, but
yeah,
you've got to err on the side of caution at the moment,
yeah,
particularly as you said, given sexual discrimination cases are unlimited in terms,
yes,
of the penalty. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. So something that we used to hear about a lot, but I actually haven't heard for some time, is the Working Time Directive.
Mm-hmm.
Could you maybe update us on what the current position is with that?
Yeah, and I actually think it's quite important that practice owners are aware of the current situation, because I come across it quite a lot where you may have a situation where a dental nurse is on call. So everybody may finish on Friday afternoons, but if there's any emergency, they take it in turns to be on call. And what's happened, there was a case in February where a firefighter who was on call claimed that he was waiting for the phone to ring, basically, and he couldn't go more than 3 miles away from his place of work because he had to get get there if he was called, and he wasn't being paid for that time when he was on call. And it was decided that that was actually working time. Mm-hmm. So if he was working more than 48 hours a week, you had to be careful because he would have to opt out, and he should have also been paid minimum wage. So even if they don't get called in on that day, which lots of practices will only pay them if they actually come into the practice to do the work, they should actually be on call. If they're on call, they should be paid for their on-call time. So I just don't want practices to be caught out because they feel as though they shouldn't be paid during that time. Anyone on call should be.
Yeah, it makes sense because, I mean, if you need people to respond in both a timely and an appropriate manner,
yes,
that's got to have an impact.
Yeah.
The travelling example that you've given, having a drink, that sort of thing, yeah, impacts
absolutely
on what,
yeah,
you
that's,
can do.
And that was the court's reason, actually. They said that because they were restricted in what they could do in that time, they were working. Because obviously they can't go off, they can't have a drink, they're literally waiting for the phone to ring. So just be aware, if you do have people that are on call, that you should be paying them for that time.
Okay. So final question from me really is, are there any other changes that are on the horizon?
Quite a lot coming up, as always, with the employment legislation, some lots of changes. The first one to be aware of is, at the moment, we don't have any legislation where employees have to take bereavement leave. So if somebody dies, it's up to the employer to give the employee time off. Most employers do, because especially if it's close family, the employee needs a little bit of time to arrange funeral arrangements and so on. But it doesn't have to be paid. It can be unpaid leave. And it's down to what's in the contract and what the employer decides in their situation. But we're moving on from that. And at the moment, we're just waiting for a bill to be finalised where the government has decided that parents should be due at least 2 weeks bereavement leave if they lose a child. So it's a step forward, and I think it's the start of more coming in, because I think that's just quite small in the grand scheme of things if somebody in your family dies, and it'll be interesting to see where we go from there,
yeah,
with that one. Other changes, a little bit like the Me Too campaign, dress codes, they need to be reviewed as well. There's been no changes in the actual legislation, but the code of conduct in respect of dress codes, which is non-binding, but the courts expect you to follow it, that has been updated and reviewed. And that came about because a receptionist in London was told that she had to wear heels, and she wasn't very happy about it, and I think she had quite sore feet by the end of the day. So what's happened is she said that was sex discrimination, because you wouldn't make a man sit there wearing heels, and she's won her case. So that's made everybody relook at their dress code policies. And I think it's important for practices to look at this, because I do know of lots of practices that have dress codes, which is absolutely fine. It's just that they may need reviewing, because I have seen some recently where they've said, you know, if you're sat on reception, you must wear makeup and have your hair tied back. And I think they're opening themselves up to a claim there. Mm. So important for that to be reviewed as well.
Mm-hmm.
And just grandparent leave, we're still waiting for this to hear. So at the moment, the man can take some of the woman's maternity leave. I must admit, I don't advise on it very often. I think the last time I read, about 0.06% of the population had taken it up. I just don't know if culturally and socially we're not quite there yet, where I don't know if it's the man not wanting to take the leave or the woman not wanting to give up her maternity leave. It could be either. But when I do talk about grandparent leave, this seems very, very popular. And basically, the grandparent will have the opportunity to take some of the mother's maternity leave to enable the mother to go back to work. and she'll have a right to take that time off. They're also going to make it easier for shared maternity leave, because it is quite complicated if you take it at the moment. So they're going to look at streamlining that, which may encourage more people to take it. We don't have a date yet. They're saying late autumn. So just watch out for that, because that will have an impact. And then finally, I think something that's quite interesting is that barristers are self-employed, and they've been given the right to take 12 months parental leave. And I just think, again, watch this space, because it's going to be quite important if they roll that out for self-employed staff, and whether we'll start seeing dental associates opting to take 12 months parental leave, and you'll have to provide them with that leave. So again, lots on the horizon, always changing very quickly, so do keep up to date with it.
Well, that's great, Sarah, as ever. Fascinating talking to you, and I really appreciate your time and all your advice and guidance. Thank you very much.
Thank you.